Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we have some great conversations lined up for you. In a moment, we're going to spend some time with our very own president of Entertainment Enterprises to talk about our Why I'm Voting initiative. Also, I'll be joined by a senior clinical psychologist from the Child Mind Institute to discuss some mental health challenges kids may be dealing with as schools begin to reopen amid the pandemic. To get things started, I'm joined by John Sykes, president of Entertainment Enterprises for iHeartMedia. John, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And in light of the upcoming election, we've launched a brand new iHeartRadio initiative called Why I'm Voting. It's an effort to encourage Americans to share their reasons for voting in local, state, and national elections on or before November 3rd. Everyone can participate at iHeartRadio.com/vote. John, let's start with how this idea came about.
Well, it came about because this election is being called the most important of a generation. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on, people feel extremely connected to their issues and what they care about, like never before. So voting, you know, there are a lot of initiatives out there just encouraging people to vote. But we really wanted to know why people are voting. And we wanted to use the iHeartRadio platform, which reaches 278 million people a month, to share why they vote and it doesn't have to be one side or the other. It's just whatever they're feeling in their hearts. And we found that no one's actually ever done this. They've basically said, get out to vote. But we really feel it's important for people to share how they feel, because that's how we do it every day. When we see our friends, and that's why we use a very powerful medium for people in a nonpartisan way to share how they feel.
And you have done some work with Rock the Vote in the past. How much did that play into the creation of this particular initiative and finding this different way to go about impacting the election, allowing people to speak out and explain why they're passionate about voting?
I think in my days before iHeart at MTV at VH1, we really saw that we had a powerful platform to speak to young people in America. Again, we didn't tell them which way to vote. We just said, we had artists share how they felt. And turns out we ended up having a presidential candidate, Bill Clinton, actually come to one of our town halls. We invited both candidates. So we just found that people are very passionate. And now more than ever, they're passionate. And that's what they look to radio to do. We're the companion in the car when you're driving. We're that person sitting next to you that's speaking with you. So we wanted to really to create a dialogue that way. We feel that with every single House seat up this year, every single 435 seats in the House of Representatives, 35 Senate seats in the office of the President of the United States, all being contested, this is a time where people should share their voices and hear what their neighbors think.
I'm joined now by John Sykes, president of Entertainment Enterprises for iHeartMedia. We're talking about our iHeartRadio initiative called Why I'm Voting. You can find out more and participate at iHeartRadio.com/vote. There's a few different levels to this initiative. Listeners can submit their own 20-second or less audio or video message at the website. And then we're also featuring messages from celebrities, athletes, influencers. It's really interesting to hear what's motivating so many different people from so many different walks of life.
That's exactly what we tried to do. We really wanted to make this diverse. So we brought in, yes, artists who are athletes who they admire, celebrities, but we also wanted real people like us. We wanted those voices mixed together with the celebrities, because those people who we obviously look up to as influencers in our life and our lives are important, but also our neighbors are important and how they feel. And so even though, we're highly divided on political ideologies in this country, it's great to hear not only people who agree with what we say, but maybe some people who disagree, and we might learn from hearing the other side. And that's what we really wanted to do, was make this really diversified. So it's famous people, great artists, athletes, and regular people, and also whatever side of the aisle you're on, your opinion is welcome.
Was part of the thinking behind this initiative also that we find ourselves these days more and more in an echo chamber, potentially on social media, following the same people who think like us? And this really offers an opportunity to perhaps hear a perspective, an angle that maybe you hadn't heard before, or because of who it's coming from, it just hits a different way. This seems like just a really great opportunity to have a discussion and to hear points of views that you just might not hear these days with how we consume information.
That's well said. We do live in silos of information, because with all the choice we have nowadays, we can we can find outlets that agree with exactly how we feel. There was a time when there were only a few outlets, so everything seemed to be democratized because it was all things for all people. And now, of course, we live in a very personalized society with television, radio, and of course, digital and social media. So our goal, because we are the biggest broadcaster probably in the world, certainly in America, we wanted to really provide a platform for people to very simply share opinions. And because we're broadcasters and people of all walks of life listen to our station and obviously follow us socially, this would be a great chance for people to actually learn what the other side might be saying. And again, we're not taking a side here. This is really about our listeners and how they feel. And we're just providing the platform, which is what we do every day for music artists or news or sports or the various content subjects we provide to our listeners. This is opening up to the most important people in our lives, which is basically our listeners.
And again, if you want to participate in our iHeartRadio Why I'm Voting initiative, you can go to iHeartRadio.com/vote. Again, that's iHeartRadio.com/vote. And also, if you want more information on local election procedures, deadlines, sometimes that can get a little overwhelming, especially for those doing it the first time. We have an avenue for you to get that information. You text the word vote to 26797. Again, vote to 26797. And look, especially this year, with mail-in voting being an option that a lot of people are utilizing, more and more people wanting to be involved and participate, it's important to know exactly how to do it. And I think that's a great way for people to get that information. And was that part of the thinking behind that aspect of what we're doing?
Yes, because as you said earlier, in a time where people's information or outlets sometimes skew information one way or the other, this is a nonpartisan information line. This really just gives you the facts. No one's going to tell you to go right, left, or in between. It's basically just going to give you the information you need once you've made your choice. And we really thought it was important because again, as you say, people live in their own echo chambers of news and information, and we just wanted people to have one safe place to go and know that they were going to just get the facts. The other thing we're going to be doing on top of these messages you'll hear all day long from famous people and just people like us is that we're going to put a series of podcasts out, and we're really going to go deeper into the subjects of why people are voting, and those will go on. Those are, we have 10 lined up that will run across these days as we lead up to the November 3rd election. So, you know, iHeart has the biggest podcast platform in America. And so you'll be able to hear a lot of these people who are only speaking for 30 or 45 seconds during the day as you're driving. But when you get some time to download a podcast, you can go deeper and really learn more about how a lot of people we know and some people like us are looking at the election and the things that really matter to them.
Search for the Why I'm Voting podcast on your iHeartRadio app, and that will feature some celebrities too, like Will Ferrell, Pitbull, Chelsea Handler, John Legend. When you reached out to these different celebrities, athletes, influencers to participate, what was the feedback like? It certainly seems like everybody wants to be involved and share their thoughts on this election for a variety of different reasons. And we've got some of the biggest names in the world who are participating in this. What was their reason for wanting to be a part of iHeartRadio's Why I'm Voting?
Well, just like you and I, they're regular people who care about issues, and they were very, very excited about having a platform that they could speak their minds about. So again, that was something that we basically, outside of someone who actually had a job that impacted politics, who couldn't be involved in this because this is something only for people who are not elected officers or not new, had no position in any news organization because we didn't want to skew opinion. They're passionate because they're like the 80% of Americans right now, which is an all-time high, who've been polled, who are interested or very interested in the elections on November 3rd. So their husbands and wives or partners or parents or children, whatever, just like the rest of us, and they care about issues. So they were very excited about having a platform to express theirs. Billie Eilish was, who's probably the biggest young sensation in music, just said, "This is my first election I can ever vote in. So I'm going to be there." And I just think that we can really impact the world, especially young people, which is you have a huge, huge segment of Gen Zs and who are now reaching 18 and who are voting for the first time. So we're seeing a country that's shifting every day, every year. And we wanted to basically provide a platform. So the artists from all shapes and all walks of life immediately said yes.
I'm joined by John Sykes, president of Entertainment Enterprises for iHeartMedia. We're talking about our iHeartRadio Why I'm Voting initiative, which you can find out more and participate in at iHeartRadio.com/vote. Every bit of polling information that we have shows that people are, like we've talked about, highly engaged in this particular election. They're paying close attention. Most really do want to participate. In terms of the participation that we've gotten from your everyday Americans who have wanted to submit their 20 seconds of audio or their video message to be a part of this program, what has the response been like so far?
It's been amazingly civilized. And carefully delivered. We didn't know what to expect.
Really?
Yeah. In this country, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
But I think when people are given the opportunity to speak their minds without anyone shouting back at them, mm-hmm. without being put into a forced situation, just having a quiet 20 or 30 seconds to just express their opinions, they're extremely eloquent and educated. We're just very impressed by people who care about things like what you would expect. So a lot of things are not as polarized as you think. They're thinking about childcare. They're thinking about education. They're thinking about safety in the streets. Things basic things are not as extreme as you would think that people would get on the phone. There are those, and of course that's part of America. We're allowed to. We're allowed to express our opinions, but we're finding a lot of people agree on some of the things in the middle, which is kind of what our country is all about. It really is. You find out that most people agree on most issues.
And for me, somebody who is in broadcasting, free speech and the First Amendment is such an important part of my life. And this also, I don't know whether or not this was an intention of yours when the idea was being created, but this is really an exercise in free speech, a celebration of the First Amendment, people getting to speak out and explain why they're voting, what they're passionate about. So that's a really important part of this, too.
Absolutely. This is a celebration of our freedom in this country. And most people, when given that power, given that platform, are extremely respectful of others and extremely eloquent. I think, you know, in situations where people square off against each other in the street in some sort of an engagement, that we see that. But a lot of times when people just, again, you give them the time, they speak their piece, their point of view, they're very clear. And that's the great thing about our country. With all the criticism, all the, you know, the infighting that we hear about, we're very lucky that we're in a place where you can say exactly how you feel and no one's going to be knocking on your door the next day questioning why you said that. This is still the greatest country in the world, and we have these freedoms. And so we wanted to celebrate them here at iHeart and just allow people to speak their mind with no retribution. It's going to be basically and hopefully maybe someone listening will kind of maybe be moved by what they say, because they'll hear someone who's just like them expressing their opinions. And again, that's a forum that we wanted to create when we launched this initiative. And it's the first time, I think, that any mass media platform has reached out to Americans to say, please share with us your thoughts, your opinions on this kind of level to hundreds of millions. So we're very excited. We're already getting incredible speeches coming in, really speeches from people, eloquent, but really points of view that we're going to share with the rest of the country.
I'm joined by John Sykes, president of Entertainment Enterprises for iHeartMedia. We're talking about our iHeartRadio Why I'm Voting initiative, which you can participate in and find out more about at iHeartRadio.com/vote. Again, iHeartRadio.com/vote. So just to recap, there's a couple of different levels to this. Listeners can submit 20 seconds or less of audio or video at iHeartRadio.com/vote. We also have celebrities, athletes, influencers. They've done the same. Plus, we have the podcast, which everyone can find on their iHeartRadio app. Just search for Why I'm Voting. So we have that angle as well. Anything I'm missing? There's a couple of different levels to this, and I just want to make sure everybody gets to experience all that we're bringing to the table with Why I'm Voting.
You hit them all. And really, it is about whether you have 15 minutes in your car on the way to work, whether you have 45 minutes for a podcast, We wanted to make it as easy as possible for our listeners wherever they are. So if you're, you know, if you're in your car and you have a few minutes, you're going to hear a couple of these during the day every time coming back and forth from work, or if you happen to be listening at home on a smart speaker. And the time to download one of the podcasts, you can go deeper if you find you're interested in what one person is saying. So it really is, it really was built to be flexible enough to serve our listeners however they could, whenever they had time to connect with it, because it's all about personalization now and really, really being there for our listeners.
So again, if you would like to participate, we would love to hear from you. You can submit your own 20-second or less audio or video message at iHeartRadio.com/vote. Again, iHeartRadio.com/vote. And then if you just need some information about your local election procedures, deadlines, all of that, it can get confusing. Text the word vote to 26797. That's vote to 26797. John Sykes, president of Entertainment Enterprises for iHeartMedia. John, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us about this. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And if you're listening right now, don't be afraid. Pick up, you know, go online, take your smartphone and tape your message. Again, we're all the same. We're all equal. Every opinion counts. So really take this opportunity to express your voice, your point of view, with, you know, the people in your city or maybe even the country.
Finally, I'm joined by Dr. David Anderson, a senior clinical psychologist at the Child Mind Institute and the senior director of their national programs and outreach, to talk about the reopening of schools and the mental health impact that's likely to have on students and parents. Dr. Anderson, thank you for your time. First of all, tell us about the Child Mind Institute and the work that you do.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. At Child Mind Institute, we have offices in New York and San Francisco. We basically have three pillars in terms of what we do. We have a clinical practice. We also have a research division focused on finding objective markers of mental health and also advancing how we use apps and digital devices in therapy. And then we also have a public outreach arm that's focused on getting parents information through our website and through social media, getting educators as much information and training as we can through national programs, which is the department that I run, and also reaching out to under-resourced and marginalized communities. And that is also the work that I do, where we've reached 45,000 students, parents, educators, and mental health providers across school districts across this country with a comprehensive suite of services for school community support.
The website for you to find out more is childmind.org. Again, childmind.org. What types of mental health issues or even just general disruptions have been most prevalent throughout this pandemic in students and young adults?
I mean, what I would say first is that the biggest disruptions that we've seen have been with parents, first and foremost, in the sense that I think parents are carrying the largest degree of stress in the midst of the pandemic and trying to balance their own responsibilities while also trying to figure out what's safest for their children as schools might present certain hybrid options or think about reopening in person, or how to support their kids if their schools are opening in fully remote learning format. So that's where we see the lion's share of the stress. Partly because I think for many children, they may be a little bit oblivious to kind of what school reopening is going to look like. And for teenagers, they've been focused in many ways, as we hear from our patients, on trying to get the most out of a pandemic summer right now and trying to figure out how they can safely have contact with friends and get the things that they're looking for developmentally, even in the midst of all the kind of public health guidelines that we need to follow. So I think as we see people transitioning back to school, you know, the biggest concerns are that, I think that folks thought in the spring that for whatever gaps we might see in terms of education or achievement that might come from distance learning and not having in-person classes, the thought was that it'd be temporary. And now, because of the status of the pandemic, what we're looking at is trying to make remote learning work, not as a stopgap, but as a full-on replacement for the course of much of the next school year. And I think that's causing a lot of concern for students who knew that might not be the best format for them. Particularly, and this goes back to the work that we do, students who may have learning challenges, students who may have learning disorders, who may have ADHD, who may have a lot of anxiety about performance in school. All of these things are writ large when, you know, you're taking away the familiar ways that students could engage with academic material.
How have you advised parents to balance a calming, more reassuring message about the pandemic with one that helps kids understand the importance of taking certain precautions like social distancing and hand washing seriously? That can be a tough thing to do.
It is absolutely. I mean, it goes back to two fundamental psychological principles that we kind of review with parents. It's acceptance and active coping. It's that there are certain things we have to accept about the pandemic related to uncertainty or related to what we don't know or related to circumstances over which we have no control. So at some level, every parent in the country is reciting some sort of serenity prayer, telling themselves there are only so many things I can control right now. At the same time, what we say to parents, particularly those parents who may be sending their children back to school in person, that they have to make critical decisions that work for their family. So some parents don't have the option to send their children back to school. Schools have elected to be entirely remote. And so a lot of that is helping parents to cope actively with, you know, the way that they might be pulled in many different directions and the kind of oversight their children might need to engage in distance learning. But to speak to the point about in-person learning, we say to parents, if you've made the decision for, you know, your children to attend school, if there is that option in person, you know, it's taking a risk. There's not so much that's changed with the pandemic to make it so that that isn't a risky decision. But knowing that it is a risk, you have to, you know, work with your family, work with your children in thinking about ways to minimize that risk. And I think a lot of schools are leading on that in terms of schools that are focused on following public health recommendations and focusing on hand washing and social distancing and putting students in pods and, you know, requiring face mask wearing at any point where students might be, you know, close together. And that at least is helping to soothe some parent anxieties, but obviously it can't make it go away.
I'm joined now by Dr. David Anderson, a senior clinical psychologist at the Child Mind Institute and the senior director of their national programs and outreach. You can find out more at childmind.org. Again, childmind.org. You know, we've seen this pandemic have a disproportionate impact on certain communities, including communities of color, lower income communities, rural communities. Can the same be said of the mental health challenges?
I think what is true, in terms of what you just said, is that we can see that the pandemic has disproportionately negatively affected communities where there's more housing insecurity, financial insecurity as a result of the economic instability, food insecurity, parents who are losing jobs, and specifically as well, communities of color. And these are effects that the stories are only just beginning to be told. Like, I think one of the things that we're seeing is that there are many stories in the media coming from the kinds of social habits of those who may have more resources or more stability during the pandemic, in the sense that we're hearing stories of, you know, parents thinking about, you know, different creative ways of schooling or creative ways of finding childcare. And those stories are very much intertwined with privilege, in the sense that if you have a certain amount of resources, you can come up with some creative solutions during this pandemic. But to be sure, one of the reasons why there already is more of a need for mental health support in the communities that are disproportionately affected, and that those stories are also likely to be unfolding, and we're going to find out more about them, as the pandemic continues to unfold. It's just that, you know, we may not even have the bandwidth to tell those stories just yet because of the level of stress that people are under. We just know that what we need to do, especially as the school year begins, is ensure that every mental health service we can possibly make available is through telehealth or whatever in-person settings are safe.
I'm joined right now by Dr. David Anderson, a senior clinical psychologist at the Child Mind Institute and the senior director of their national programs and outreach. You can find out more at childmind.org. As schools are reopening and kids are going back for in-person learning, what are some behavioral changes that parents should keep an eye on to make sure their child isn't having a rough time adjusting?
Right. I think with a lot of parents that we're consulting with right now, what we say is try to set up before school even starts the kind of accountability kind of gates that you would really like to figure out with your child so that it isn't something where you have to do it on the back end and it becomes nagging or a source of fight. In that you sit down with your kid and you say, look, here's what we won't know as we come back through distance learning. Or, you know, I won't know necessarily if you attend each of your classes on time. I may not know if you're, you know, turning in your assignments because I don't have that in-person contact with your teachers. We won't even have that ride to school or that walk to school, you know, for a few minutes just for me to be able to check in. So as much as we've just spent the past 5 months, likely in close quarters, let's set up what our check-ins are going to be so that it doesn't have to be something where you feel like I'm on top of you or I'm nagging you about these things. And so I think that's the accountability set up for school, and especially with teenagers. I think in terms of mental health, what we say to parents is similar to what we said the entire pandemic. It's that what you want to think about on the return to school is structuring the schedule, which is good for absolutely everyone, you know, in and around school. It's kind of like, what other routines can we put in place? Basic wellness practices, really thinking about whether kids are eating a healthy diet, whether they're getting exercise of some kind in a way that's safe, and whether they're getting good sleep. Social contact, even if that's digital, making sure that kids have time to connect with their friends, and it doesn't count if the only time they see their friends is in online schooling. We've got to figure out kind of ways to be safe and to be able to do that. And then finally, we tell parents to look out for kind of signs and symptoms. And we talk about just the idea that during the pandemic, if kids are isolating themselves for long periods of time in their room, or they seem like they have a lot of concerns they keep asking their parents about over and over and over, or, you know, they seem much more sluggish and fatigued, and maybe this is a result of a lack of sleep, or maybe this is the result of a real dip in motivation. These are the moments we tell parents, reach out to mental health professionals. Oddly enough, during the pandemic, I think, as we've said across the country, mental health professionals are more available than ever because telehealth has become so much more the way that mental health professionals are functioning right now. So we tell parents it doesn't have to be that you're thinking there's a serious problem with your child before you reach out to somebody, at least for a consult. And that's really where we want to, you know, push people to kind of think about, you know, moving past stigma and seeking out that consultation. And we have lots of resources, as you've said, in Facebook Lives and on our social media and on our website, childmind.org.
One final question for you. We all remember what happens in school. Things get said, kids repeat what they hear at home or see on TV or read online, and misinformation can spread. What should parents do to make sure their child isn't having their view of all of this shaped by something new and maybe incorrect that they hear at school?
We have multiple articles on this on our website. It's a really good question. It's something where, you know, the facts keep changing in terms of what we need to keep kids informed of, but at the same time, the talking points don't. In that, for any child, we want the facts that they hear to come from trusted adults so that they know kind of that they can trust the source of the information. And we want them to be provided with information about the pandemic. We hear from lots of parents, you know, should I just not speak to my kid about this so as not to stress them out? And the answer is no. You know, kids do better when they're not in the dark. So we want parents to speak about the coronavirus crisis. We want them to speak about what's going on, racial injustice and Black Lives Matter in this country. We want them speaking about some of the challenges and concerns that people have in returning to school, and even to understand, you know, some of the challenges on the part of the educators that are serving them related to public health in this crisis. So it's good to share those facts with kids at a developmentally appropriate level. And then what we do is we wait for their questions and we let them know we're available. So if they have questions in the moment or feelings they want to share, we want to give them space to do that. And then we also want to let them know, look, if you hear anything about this that's distressing to you, or you hear something that you really have questions about, just know I'm here and we'll make space to keep talking. This is a stressful time. That's the best thing the parents can do for their children.
Dr. David Anderson, a senior clinical psychologist at the Child Mind Institute and the senior director of their national programs and outreach. Dr. Anderson, thank you for joining us and sharing your expertise. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me this forum.
As we wrap things up here, I want to offer a big thanks to all of our guests and, of course, to all of you for listening to iHeartRadio Communities. If you want to hear previous episodes of the show, we're on your iHeartRadio app. Just search for iHeartRadio Communities. And you can find me on social media at Ryan E. Gorman. We'll be back same time, same place next weekend. Stay safe.